Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I always get stuck right here.
Yeah, we said our names, that's all we need to do.
Yeah, I gotta get past this thing about once my name is said, I'm so fascinated.
Well, we're supposed to wait for the listeners to say their names at this point. And it's always this long wait. It's like saying, hey, how are you?
And maybe
they don't answer.
I think at that point they say, I say, hello, I'm Jeff. And they all say, hello, Jeff.
There you go.
And at that point I'm supposed to say, and I've been sober for, no.
No. Probably not.
No? Okay.
You've been sober a long time.
Yeah,
well, you were never massively drunk, so.
That's the point, you know. I've been sober a really long time, which gives me a tremendous advantage over some people who aren't sober. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. I already said that, didn't I?
Yep.
Well, the Personal Wealth Coach, we're supposed to disclose to you that the Personal Wealth Coach is not just a radio program. Jake doesn't like to call it a show because it's definitely not a show. Because
we can see it.
We can see it, but you can't. it is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm that is registered with the United States Securities Exchange Commission. That's our regulator. It's domiciled, headquartered, and otherwise exists in Salado, Texas. And it's a firm that manages wealth for people who have wealth, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that people have wealth. There's even an article in the Wall Street Journal about wealth, about who has the wealth and who doesn't. And since the rate recession, or whatever that thing was that we had.
The great recession is probably the best word for it.
I think rate recession.
Rate recession.
Yes, because the
Greeks were involved here.
You know, I mean, the rates were lowered, and the Greeks had something to do with it. So I think we should just rename it the rate recession.
We could call it that anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, this apparently a much larger disparity. And this is a big shock to the economists, I guess. But it was a much larger disparity in wealth now after the events of 2008 and 2009 than there was before.
Right. And this is something I think you know this about me, and some of the listeners who have been listening for quite a long time know this about me. I've been following the income figures as posted by the IRS when they post how many people have filed under which income levels and all that good stuff.
Big lag there. I mean, you know.
There is. It's about a year. And what I have seen is that the people that were most impacted as a percentage of their income, as a percentage of their wealth during the recession, were the ultra wealthy.
But they came back very nicely and are now more wealthy than they were.
Right. And the poor people, if you can call them poor, the poorest of the people were least impacted by the recession.
But they
have gone down, and they have not recovered.
Right.
Where the wealthy people have not only recovered, they recovered at the same speed that they dropped, only they just kept right on going up. So the disparity in wealth is that huge numbers of dollars coming into a relatively few people. And this is one of those things where it's really easy to look back if you're mixing numbers and say, look back in 2010 and compare it to 2014 and the poor people in 2010 and the rich people in 2014.
Well, you just had to back up before the recession to see that, and it's an interesting thing.
But I like to use numbers for the same, you know, if we're using numbers for rich people, let's use the same date for numbers for poor people. And what that shows is that the rich people were massively impacted by the recession. But the recovery has also had a massive impact on their values, their wealth. They've recovered very quickly, and they're way up above where they were to begin with.
There's a really clear picture from 1983 to 1990. It's in the Wall Street Journal if you're interested in looking at that. Real-time economics said U.S. wealth near a record. In other words, we've almost recovered the average family's total net worth has almost recovered to where it was in 2007, just before the, quote, Great Recession. And unfortunately, if you happen to be other than Caucasian, your position is still down, and this is their numbers, not mine, but I certainly have seen some evidence of this. The net worth of, for instance, an African, the average African American family in the United States was something around $20,000+ in 2007, and it's about $11,000 today, whereas the average white net worth, the average white family, $192,500 versus $141,000 today. And the only reason I bring that up is that in and of itself would be part of the cause of the loud noises we've been hearing from both coasts in the middle of the United States, Ferguson, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
There's this sense that when you and your neighborhood and the people around you are going downhill economically while you look over at another very clearly identifiable group of people and they're going uphill quickly. And the other thing that came out about that that I thought was really fascinating is a map by county in the United States showing wages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't seen it, but I'd like to look at that.
But there's a big pattern that immediately jumps out, among other things, from 2004 to today. Bell County has seen an overall average wage increase of 10.7%.
That's pretty good.
That's excellent. Now, that's not, no inflation has been taken out of that or anything. So basically, we've kept up with inflation and beat it
a little bit. Yeah.
But on the East and West Coasts,
uh-huh.
It's gone the other way. The average income of a family on the East and West Coast has declined.
And that's also not including inflation, which means that it's declined faster than
right.
It even looks.
But up through the middle of the country,
uh-huh.
It's just this pattern right down through the middle of the country where wages have risen. And any of you overlay a political overlay over it, you discover that if you happen to be in a red county, your wages have gone up. And if you're in a blue county, your wages have gone down.
All of this is a great segue into something that I've been talking a lot about lately. A lot of my study has been in the behavioral economics area. And there's this really deep feeling of fairness that when people see it being violated, they get really upset. People can be standing in line, and somebody cuts to the head of the line. I've seen this happen, for instance. I saw it on the flight back from Washington, D.C. last week. I went to Washington, D.C. to talk with regulators and with people in the investment world about the regulations that are coming and so on. And in line for the airplane, I was traveling American, which I'm not real happy with that as an airline, but on the way back, we came back through American.
You'd rather travel Russian?
No, that's the Russian airline's even worse.
Okay, just checking.
It's bad, okay. And it has borscht at the same time.
Okay,
so it's
bad borscht.
Yeah.
And the engines fall off.
Right.
But other than
yeah,
that,
other
it's
than
okay.
That. Yeah. So I'm standing in line. Of course, American has like 82 or more groups that have priority over the other groups, and there's these secret passwords and handshakes, and are you a Ruby Platinum Ultra Preferred, or are you a Preferred Ultra Happy
Actually,
Platinum
you need
Ruby?
All you really need is a crutch.
Right, yeah, and then you get right. Well, no, actually, it's a lot of the weird combinations of metals and gemstones, as well as first class and business class, go in front of people that have disabilities. So this is all going on. I'm standing in line, which is humorous to begin with, as the airplane takes off at the same time for everyone. When you sit down, it doesn't matter which order you got on the airplane leaves at the same time for everyone there.
You get to sit longer.
Yeah, you get to sit longer, and you have more access to the overhead space.
Yes.
So if you have a roll on, which I just try not to do that, so it doesn't matter to me. Anyway, I'm standing there in line. We're standing, and it's a chaotic system where they're calling people, and there's this mass mob of people, and occasionally people will come trickling through them. I'm in this group, excuse me. Well, they eventually call my group. My group was group one.
Ooh.
So no...
Yeah, but
no
group one, which is really group like 12.
Right. Right. And there's no metal, precious metals or precious
or gems.
Gems or anything
okay.
involved there. And the lady goes...
Platinum ruby.
Right. Yeah. Lady behind me goes, finally,
So we're queuing up to get into this very short little line area when there's huge crowd of people filling up the whole area that, you know, then one group at a time fills up this very short, maybe 3 or 4 meter long line and it's going through there. So we're getting into line and a man says, excuse me, and cuts to the front of the line and hands his ticket over. And the lady behind me said some words that were not repeatable on the air. Mm-hmm. About the basically translating the nerve of the man in a much more polite way.
Some discussion about his ancestry?
Right, his ancestry and the fact that he may have testicles were involved in this.
No, you're getting a little tight. You're getting...
Right,
you know,
so
we'll talk about
this anatomy was brought up history of anatomy and so on. It was and what he could do with his anatomy. So all of this was going on.
Sounds like it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I said, I turned back in a joking way and I said, well, he said, excuse me. At least he was polite about it. So we got onto the airplane. As we're walking forward, something pops to our attention. We passed him as he was sitting down in first class.
Uh-huh.
He had every right to cut to the front of the line.
Right.
Because he paid 3 times as much for his ticket as we did.
He paid an absurd amount
it's
of money
an
for
It's an obscene
ticket.
Amount of money for a ticket, and he did it. And the lady didn't say anything about it. She just huffily went on back to her seat.
How dare he sit in first class.
Right. And this comes back to something very clear in behavior. Our concept of fairness. It doesn't exist in the world. It is all in our head. And I will tell you how deep this is because there are a long series of studies done by many universities that started at some of the big Ivy League colleges, and they dealt with golden retrievers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard me talk about this study?
No, but I'm listening.
All right. There's a large group of golden retrievers, and this study has been repeated and done over long periods of time and short periods of time.
They were a large group. Of golden retrievers?
Right.
Were they waiting to get on an airplane?
No, but pretty close. You'll hear.
Okay,
so the population of golden retrievers being used in the study were broken into groups. One group was brought into a big room where the golden retrievers could all see each other. And one group was broken into individual situations where the golden retrievers were just observed. All of the golden retrievers, as a prerequisite, had to know how to shake hands. Use their front paw to shake hands on command, and it needed to be close to 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Very reliably shake hands.
Okay.
Okay.
Even though they don't have hands.
Right. They're shaking paw to hand, so it's very, we need to make sure
understand
all this.
That,
okay.
Right.
So this is a simple trick, and what happened was the neuroscientists, to play a mind twist on the dogs, both individually, where the dogs couldn't see other dogs, and in the large group setting, would randomly give treats to dogs when they did the trick, and randomly not give treats to dogs when they did the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on an individual setting, dogs are randomly given treats as they're doing the trick, and the dog is happy 100% of the time, no problem. Goes all the way through it. And at the end of this long-term study, the individual dogs, the dogs that are doing this by themselves, have no change in their reliability in doing the trick. 100% of the time, they are shaking their paw with your hand. It goes right on without saying. It's perfect. The group that is all together, only about 60% of them continue to perform the trick. And it didn't matter if they were the one that received the treat or if it was someone else that received the treat and they didn't. They found a sense of fairness in golden retrievers, where a golden retriever would look around at the other dogs and see some dogs getting treats for the same trick and not other dogs. So their performance dropped.
So you're trying to say that if we treat our employees in a manner they consider to be fair, their performance will probably rise, but if they sense one member, even if it's not them, being treated unfairly, their performance will fall.
Right, and there's a big study.
Boy, that is so intuitively right in a corporate environment.
Right, absolutely. This is why human resources is so scared about who knows about what salaries anywhere.
Yeah, but when they terminate people, that's...
Yeah.
Probably if you go around terminating dogs.
Right.
their performance will fall off.
Right. I've recognized that as well, yes. So this concept, this came out about siblings. There was a science study, a neuroscience study on siblings and how they, how close they are to their siblings as adults, and throwing in the favoritism aspect. If they believed that there was favoritism, even if they were the favorite, they're likely to be a lot less close to their siblings than people that believed that there was no favoritism at all. And so it's deep in us, but the reality of the world is that there is no fairness outside of our minds. There is not, you know, rain doesn't fall fairly. Rain falls where it falls. Gravity does not function fairly. It just functions equally everywhere. If there's a density of mass, it's what it functions on.
I personally think gravity is prejudicial.
Right. It does not function
backwards. It creates more, far more drag on overweight people than others.
Right. And the longer you've been awake, the stronger it gets for some reason.
Yes.
I don't know why that is. It just feels like it gets stronger and stronger over time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm saying this because we have this worldwide need to compare. Why are we showing the map of the United States by county according to average wages, except to say, oh, look, oh, what's going on over there, and that's not fair, or to say, man, that's where I want to live. If it's not fair, you should probably move to one of the places where it looks like it is fair. That's an easy one to say.
The article wasn't trying to say whether it was fair or unfair. It simply was reporting on a fact, and I think it was probably a pretty good one.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying the article was saying it was fair. It's just that's what comes out of it. This is where the it's not fair that someone over there is getting paid more than
here. Well, I think one of the things is they noted that oil and agriculture have done very, very well during this period, and if you were working for a major corporation in a highly dense in a very dense area where there are a lot of minorities, you did poorly.
Right.
I mean, that's just, you know, and you take a look around and you realize there's probably a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sure it's infuriating the readers of The New Yorker.
Right.
Because The New Yorker famously published the viewpoint of their readers, and it was echoed as saying, oh, yes, that's correct. I don't know any of you
what
listeners,
was the viewpoint?
It was on there. It was a cover drawing. Cartoon sort of thing that The New Yorker typically has some kind
right.
of a cartoon on there.
Uh-huh.
And it basically showed the view of the United States of America from the perspective of the typical reader of The New Yorker.
Right, California and New York.
You had the East Coast, you had Boston and New York, and, you know, and there was this big, there was this thing, flyover country, and, you know, a few cattle and cactus sticking up and a stalk of corn, and then there was big California and all, you know,
San Francisco, Los Angeles.
That's where the term flyover country came from.
Right.
And I've actually seen that up on a poster. And I really do think that is a viewpoint of a lot of people. And not coincidentally, the readers of the New Yorker are concentrated in what we refer to as blue states and blue counties. If I could give a name to this wage disparity that has come out, it's called the Revenge of the Reds.
Right.
The Republicans being the Reds, but the more one of the first things that kind of jumps out at you from this is that the more conservative politically a county is in the United States, the more likely the people in that county were to have seen their wages go up
during and
since
after
2009.
Right. So what we see here is very similar to what we see in portfolio management, which is aggressive people. People that are progressive, aggressive in their portfolios tend to do really well until there's a downturn in the market, and then they do really, really poorly, and they don't recover very well. Then people that are conservative in their portfolios tend to do not so well in the good times, but then tend to recover really fast when there's a downturn.
Well, that brings me to the next thing I want to talk about.
Let's give the phone numbers as well. We haven't done that yet.
We have phone numbers?
I believe we do. Yes.
If you'd like to call in and discuss this with us or ask questions about things economic or to do with portfolios or investments. 773-1400 is the number in East Bell County.
Or 1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
I kind of suspect some of our listeners are aware of the fact that the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell more than 300 points on Friday.
Why would you think so?
I think that the people who listen to the show probably, or this program, like 3.8% fall in the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week. That's probably significant to some people. The fact that it's up over 8% for the year, I mean, for year to date, is probably critical to their minds. But it's still one of those things that people are aware of. And it's also totally, the market in the short term can be so amazingly irrational that it's sometimes hard to even, for me to comprehend. And I've been watching it for well over 30 years now. And the reason given, and it looked like this is really the reason that the indices fell this week, was because the price of oil is coming down. Well, more specifically, the International Energy Agency, IEA, announced that they expect that the price of oil will continue to fall during 2015. Did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
The interpretation that traders, the people who get in and out of the market and who move the market on a daily basis, applied to that was, the economy is going to slow down. The world economy is going to continue to slow down next year. Therefore, we should get out of the market. Now, when you take into account that the largest economy in the world is about 70% driven by consumers, and that as the price of oil falls, the consumers have more money to spend on something other than gasoline.
Correct.
And they have, and not coincidentally at the same time, the consumer confidence index rose dramatically in the last month. And people are feeling much more expansive about what they're going to buy for Christmas because they have more money in their pocket because the price of gasoline went down.
Retail sales increased 0.7% in November.
So all of this says the earnings of companies on the U.S. stock market will probably do very well, much better than they would have done otherwise. So, of course,
there's a drop in the stock market.
The market, and it turned out that the whole thing was, and it literally is a panic, where there were people who had made some bets, apparently, with borrowed money in many cases, on oil prices turning around, and they'd bought energy companies. And when the IEA came out and said, whoops, oil prices are going to continue to fall through next year, just on that headline, those people sold off their oil-related holdings, which caused the indices to start to fall, which caused the people who saw the indices starting to fall and thinking the really smart people must be getting out of the market, so I'll get out of the market too. Wow. I mean, it was just...
All the numbers showing for November and consumer confidence and retail sales and sales of automobiles and sales. Mm-hmm. There was an area where sales dropped at convenience stores. Sales were down.
Because of gasoline.
Gasoline prices fell. Yeah. But that money is being used elsewhere, and it was a net positive, a massive net positive, which is interesting because what it means is that people spend more on other things than just the gas money. They feel better about spending because gas is so inexpensive.
And there's an irony that came out of this in the oil area that I was digging into. Shipping companies, the ones that own the tankers, had their prices, had their stocks fall 17%. Well, this is interesting because their earnings are up double digits in the last few months. The lower the price of oil goes, the higher the earnings of the tanker companies.
They have a set cost for transporting the oil in many cases.
Yeah, and they burn fuel.
Right.
And that's not the biggie.
No.
The biggie is let me give you one example out of many, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela used to sell virtually all of its oil to the United States.
Right.
Except that which it gave to Cuba.
Or itself.
Right.
Yeah.
They now have to go to China to sell oil.
Because we're not going to buy it at the price they want to sell it at.
Well, we now produce so much oil that we don't need to import oil from Venezuela anymore.
Unless they drop the price below what we have here, the Saudis have done.
Well, this is the point. They have dirty oil. They have thick, heavy oil.
Yeah, it's not sweet at all.
And we have started to convert the refineries that traditionally have refined that over to sweet oil.
Because it's easier.
Well,
cheaper.
And the whole point is shale oil tends to be very sweet oil.
Yeah.
And, for instance, Nigeria used to sell most of its oil to the United States. It has sweet oil, but still it used to sell most of it to the United States. However, we're buying virtually zero from Nigeria, so they shifted it to Europe. But the Europeans their economies have slowed down. So
they're
not
using as much.
So again, the Nigerians are now having to ship their oil to China and India.
Uh-huh.
Which is a much longer trip.
Now, this got to go around to Africa.
This is my point. As the price of oil falls,
the Suez Canal.
There's a very, very, very clear pattern. As the price of oil falls, and these companies, these countries that are desperate for every dollar because they're spending every dollar they get, continue to produce the oil, they have to ship it further and further to find a market for it. And as a result, it's very clear that as the price of oil falls, the earnings of the tanker companies will rise. So what we had this week was a sell-off in tanker companies because the price of oil went down. That's just this herd mentality in a panic.
It's backwards.
Is so amazing.
It's predictable, though. We shouldn't be shocked by it anymore. I just feel like because we've learned so much over the years, I tend to think that it's knowledge that everyone has picked up at the same time. And when it goes the other way, it is surprising. It is shocking to see people do, you know, when we made a mistake 2 decades ago and we learned from it, and then we see the same mistake being made. You know, we didn't learn from other people's mistakes when we made it 2 decades ago. Hopefully we're doing that a lot more. We're looking around and saying, well, what have other people done here? Oh, let's not do that.
So fundamentally, the market dropped this week because of irrationality run amok, which is, what was it, in the short term, the market is a casino, and in the long term, it's a wealth creator or something?
Yeah, something like that.
But it's one of those things that if you're concerned about the short-term market fall that occurred this week, by the way, it's tiny compared with how much the market has risen during this year, but and how much it's likely to rise next year. The like you said, retail sales are up in November, the biggest jump in 8 months. Congress, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the things that might cause the market to crash. High on the list was Congress being stupid, right?
Yep. They got pretty close to being stupid, but worked out.
But the point is, they didn't pass. Did you hear what they called that bill that passed?
No, I just thought it was a budget bill.
It was a, continuing resolution omnibus, Cromnibus bill. A Cromnibus bill.
Ah.
It was a continuing resolution omnibus bill. Instead of passing a budget, they passed a Cromnibus.
Right.
Which did not exist prior to this week. But they did pass a $1.1 trillion Cromnibus bill.
It sounds like something you're not supposed to do while traveling on mass transit.
I think you're not actually supposed to do it while in Congress either, because I'm reasonably convinced that the people who passed it hadn't read it, because it's huge. And
It is, but a lot of that had to do with alternative minimum tax and things like that being put in there, and that's pretty much the same with some minor number variations that went into it.
And there were some. It must have been a good bill, though, because the extreme right and the extreme left both hate it.
Yes.
So
the extreme left say, you still have control of the Senate. Why are you passing this Republican bill? And the Republicans are saying, we just got control of the Senate. Why are you giving any concessions at all to the Democrats?
There are a couple of things in there. The Republicans had been pushing for a relaxation on derivatives trading by banks,
yep,
on the strict rules, and...
And they did. They got that.
And to free up the Federal Reserve to have more flexibility in how it set capital requirements for certain insurance companies.
Right. And they went from... There's
and
another,
they got that.
There's another piece in there. The financing of running for office. The ability to put money into,
yep,
the coffers of a congressman or a senator
got raised a bunch.
Yes, it went from $23,400 to $234,000.
Just a zero.
Yeah, it's just add a zero to the end. What's the
right.
big deal with a zero? So you can now donate $234,000 to a campaign of a person,
right,
in any given year,
right.
And
if you,
each person,
right. If you just have a sudden urge to donate $250,000 or thereabouts to John Carter,
you don't just have to do it. You can do it. You and your wife can do it together. If you want to do $500,000, you can
right.
both get
well, almost
there.
Half a million.
Right, almost, not quite half a million. I mean,
yeah, just short of half a million.
Yeah, we don't want to quibble, but it is,
I mean,
a little less than
he
half
might
a million.
Need it.
So anyway, there's another piece that went in there,
right,
that would probably most people, you know, there was a survey that just went out about marijuana legalization in Texas. And 58% of Texans think that it should be regulated like alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
58% is a pretty massive majority when you consider elections generally go 51,
but
52.
But it's not going to happen.
It may not. It is possible. It's not legalization. So,
but you don't have 58% of the Tea Partyists.
No, and see that's a one good point there. But that's, you know, I'm using that number for a reason. The federal government made a couple of decisions here. The Washington D.C. just had a referendum, a vote of the people that live there to decriminalize marijuana. So that people could use it on
right.
the streets or whatever.
Well, decriminalize the possession.
The possession
still
and
illegal,
use.
It's still illegal to buy it or sell it.
No, they have a different law that's been on the books for 12 years that made it legal to buy and sell. However, as part of the Cromnibus, which is the same sort of thing, there's writers
right.
in
right.
there, that 12 years ago happened, Congress said, nope.
It's illegal.
No, they just said, nope. It's pretty much all they have to say. They said no to the resolution that was passed. Nope, can't do that. So this is an interesting, if you're talking about small government, if you're talking about voice of the people or whatever, that doesn't exist there. And no taxation without representation and so on. Anyway, Washington, D.C. is different. But at the same time, that they
that's
did that,
right.
that they said it is illegal still in Washington, D.C. To possess or use, even for medicinal uses. They also defunded the DEA and the Department of Homeland Security and Justice to prosecute medical marijuana cases in states where the state law says it's legal. How's that for a mixed message? So they list all the states one at a time. It's a very quick one-paragraph writer. And it's basically defunding the DEA and the Justice Department.
So they can't
and Homeland Security.
They can't prosecute.
For false.
But only in certain states.
Well, only the states that have medicinal laws. So this is just as confusing as it can get. Basically, if there's a medicinal law and a decriminalization law, the DEA is only allowed to prosecute or to investigate in cases where it believes that it's just decriminalization rather than medicinal.
I think you're getting a little too complex.
Here. It's a little bit silly. That's what the Cromnibus is all about, is being a little bit silly a lot, and eventually you get a lot of a little bit silly is just silly everywhere. Anyway, that we've got to play some commercials, but that I thought that was a good representation of the silliness of the law in that they're saying to Washington, D.C., no, and to the states that have voted for basically the same thing. Oh, yeah, sure, for you guys, it's okay. It's just interesting.
That's when you have government by committee. Well, we have some commercials to play. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we will be talking about investments and things of that ilk on the other side. You're certainly welcome to call us, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I got to remember to breathe every once in a while. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll be back after these important words from Town Square's sponsors.
If you have...
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're here at KTEM, and the telephone numbers are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And that's presuming that this is December
the 13th.
Well, Friday the 13th fell on a Saturday.
Yeah.
In December of 2014.
Well, I want you to know today is 12-13-14.
Wow.
Yes.
Do you suppose that means the end of the world?
I think the end of the world is what we're sitting on. If we step
keeps moving
above the end of the world, we will have to fall back down to it.
Yes. The only reason, you know, I tell people this a lot, when they think the end of the world is coming for some reason, I said, it can't. Why? They said, because it's moving too fast for the end of the world to catch up with it.
Right.
If it ever stops.
The end would have to catch up.
Yeah, if it ever stops. If the world ever stops moving.
Then the end would catch it faster.
Yeah, we'll have the end within a few minutes. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi.
On
this current budget, but specifically in the area of the immigration.
You're talking about the Cromnibus?
Yes.
The Cromnibus,
yes,
okay.
The spending bill.
Yeah, it's a Cromnibus.
there are two things about the immigration. You know, the Chamber of Commerce and corporations, you know, they want the cheap labor. And then there's also, I think, like, countries like Greece and Japan, they need younger workers. Birth rates are going down.
Yeah, but they will not allow them into Japan.
Right.
Because they're not Japanese.
I wonder how much of the truth. The truth is what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I know we need the cheap labor and everything, but then we can just kind of take people's welfare away from them and make them work for it.
No, doesn't work. No, we tried that. We actually did that already.
Yeah.
About 80% of the people, we have about 80% fewer as a percentage of the population on welfare that we had prior to Clinton's welfare reform. So, you know, we actually did that already. So that doesn't work anymore. I mean, when you got a mother, we have a single mother with five kids, you start, and no car.
Yeah, I see.
It kind of gets hard to get her to work.
How much of the motivation is to get all these people paying Social Security taxes? Could that be the reason?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the big things that...
It's what's keeping Social Security afloat. If
right,
you look at
yeah.
the Government Accounting Office, their report... on Social Security, the first paragraph every year for the past several decades has talked about their projections have to be altered because there's money coming in for Social Security numbers
mm-hmm.
that isn't being earned by the person whose Social Security
yeah.
number it is.
So you've got a big chunk of Social Security staying healthy, and for that matter, Medicare staying healthy, is the number of people who are paying into the system who cannot legally draw any money out
because
they're using somebody
number.
Else's Social Security number.
So you might want to check your Social Security estimates and see.
Paying into the system?
Yeah, just see how much money you actually made one of those years. Because it has led to IRS audits where people come in and they say you paid in a bunch of money mm-hmm. to Social Security and you only paid this much in taxes federally.
There's, almost all, and there are exceptions, and they're mostly in the construction industry. But almost all of the people who are illegally working in the United States have borrowed someone else's Social Security number and are and their employer is paying Social Security and Medicare taxes that they are getting no credit for. Somebody else is getting credit for it.
I see.
And it pays into the system and keeps the system much more healthy. We really literally have about 11 million people in the United States paying into the system without getting any credit for it, which is good for the people whose Social Security number they borrowed, because those people will have higher Social Security benefits when they retire than they otherwise would have. Isn't that neat?
Yeah, well, I guess so. Who can I find to give my Social Security number to?
I wouldn't recommend it because there are significant drawbacks to that, like once somebody gets your Social Security number and enough information to claim your identity, they might go ahead and take out some credit cards in your name while they're at it.
Yeah, I mean, why not get a house and car?
Yeah. So there's pluses and minuses to everything. But very frankly, the issue is, one of the issues, by the way, in trying to semi-legalize the people in the United States working who aren't supposed to be here, is that more of them would be paying in to Social Security than are today, because very frankly, there's a lot of people, particularly in the construction, in the housing construction industry, and in a lot of other places where they're just paid cash by people.
That's what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah. And they're not, their employers are not paying the Social Security taxes on their behalf. It's not them that's not paying it.
Right.
And it's their employers who are not paying.
There's another little piece here based on that Cromnibus. They actually had a budget to vote on, and they had a continuing resolution omnibus bill to vote on, and they combined the two, which made it a Cromnibus. And anyway, I
really like the fact that we passed a Cromnibus.
Right. What happened was that the Department of Homeland Security is only funded through February.
Right. Which means that after February, you ain't getting on an airplane.
Right. So unless they pass a new thing at that point, and this is the issue, the Republicans said, we're not going to fund Homeland Security after February because there's too many illegal immigrants. And the president's executive order means that there's going to be more.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is defund the people that prevent illegal immigrants from coming in.
You got it.
Makes perfect sense. It's like the market.
You completely understand the market. And interestingly enough, by the way, the only department, the only part of the Department of Homeland Security that will continue to function if Homeland Security gets defunded in February because the president refuses to budge and the Republicans carry through on their threat, will be the part that authorizes people who are here illegally to be here legally, because it's self-funded, because people pay fees directly to it.
It
doesn't need any money from Congress.
Right.
So what they will do is they will shut down the Coast Guard. They will shut down the Border Patrol. You know, that's on a scale of 1 to 10, that's silly. But they've made their point.
Well, they made their point.
You guys, sometimes, because you know, you go a period of time without any callers, you might think there's not too many people listening. But over the past several months now, there's this big 600-acre farm outside of Davila where we kind of started gathering and listening to your radio show, and the crowds have grown, and there's about 2,000 or 3,000 people out here right now, and we just all kind of sit.
Are you a member of Congress? Are you a member of Congress?
You're obviously a politician of some kind, because
yeah.
we can
yeah.
tell that the campaign finances, campaign promises are lacking in some
yeah.
form of veracity here.
You must have been inside the Beltway in Washington at some point and been infected with whatever's got them.
I just need some formal trainings. Please send your campaign contribution to $230,000.
Yeah, that's it. 230. You need to run for Congress is
yeah.
what you need to do. That way people can give you up to $230,000 a piece.
I'm not sure that he actually ever said people gathered. He said there was a gathering of about 6,000. It could be cattle or blades of grass if you...
Or ants, fire ants. Probably fire ants.
Bovine. We're all bovine. Well, gentlemen, I got to jump out and deliver a package. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, sir.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, right there we have an example of the thing that you and I both read today. Consumer sentiment hits the highest it has hit since the rate recession.
Rate recession, yes.
The rate recession. I mean, if we can have a Cromnibus, we should be able to have a rate recession.
Yes.
And we have another caller on 773-1400. Go ahead.
Let me talk about the illegal aliens and whatnot. I have a question I've often wondered about. Everyone since birth has a Social Security number and supposedly a Social Security card, correct?
Well, I don't have a card. Last time I saw my card, I was a teenager.
Yeah, and it's not really since birth. You have to file with the Social Security office.
They now get it right at birth, though, yeah.
Right. Okay, so...
They have to sign with their foot.
You supposedly are supposed to have a Social Security card. What is the big opposition to having a national ID card?
Well, now everybody is not supposed to have a Social Security card. I haven't had one.
You just have to have a number.
You have to have a number, but you don't have to have a card. The card is just a piece of cardboard.
Well, the reason why there's a movement against the national ID is The United States is supposed to be the land of the free.
And the home of the brave.
And the home of the brave. And we have for decades now scoffed at the Gestapo asking people for their papers at every transport station. We do that now. And I actually happen to have a national ID card in my wallet. It is a passport card that is usable in the Caribbean, in Mexico, and in Canada. However, it's not a requirement to have
mm-hmm. it. Well, no, there's the debate basically is that the more conservative states, the more red states and county states mainly, really do want us to have national papers and national ID cards proving that we're citizens.
Yes.
And the more liberal says, no, the government has no business interfering in our lives to that degree.
Which seems backwards to me, because the liberals are generally trying to get as much into people's lives with the government as possible.
This is part of the reversal.
Yeah, there's a reversal happening.
There's so many aspects of everyday life that you need some kind of ID, like you said, passport,
yeah, but states,
driver's license.
That's generally been handled.
Welfare, for food stamps. Yeah,
that's handled by the state level.
Identification anyway, why not just push the national ID card? You can put all your information, they can computerize them or put mm-hmm. a chip in them.
Yeah.
Put everything in there.
Why don't they just put a chip in the people? They could put a chip in the people. That would work.
Well, we got a break, but I want to come back to that next hour, okay?
I'll listen then. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And I was being facetious with the chip in the people. Please.
No. Let's not do that.
Seriously.
We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
The last thing I want is the federal government. Well,
They already know a lot.
Well, they know a lot, but it's in different agencies, and they have a heck of a time coordinating.
Right.
Man, a national computerized ID card required for every U.S. citizen to prove they're a U.S. citizen would be so frightening to me that I would want to – it would be one of the few things the government could do that would really scare me. But it's probably coming.
That and registering all the guns, you know, that sort of thing.
It's
right
together.
In the same boat.
As soon as right now, the government doesn't know who exists where, and they have to coordinate among agencies with different computer programs that don't understand each other.
Right.
So we're really safe from the federal government.
For a while,
force us all to be able to prove our citizenship instantly on the spot, and you will have the federal government knowing everything. But we've got to move on to other things. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail on weekends and real live human being answer the phone. Human beings answering the phone during the week, and the telephone number locally is 947-1111.
You can also reach that same voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts. You can hit the Contact Us button. You can email us directly at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com.
And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.